Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
People tend to get terms of service confused with the law. It's okay. Kind of amazing. In my 5 years of growth hacking, there's been no expose. I've never done anything wrong. You know what I mean? If you search my name, you'll never get, he did this really bad hack. Because I never did anything really immoral or illegal. I just used the terms of service to their absolute limit. Does this make sense?
Please elaborate. When you say you use the terms of service,
okay, so it's legal to, if you're a business, email another business in America.
Right.
That's it. It's legal. So you can send 10 million emails a day if you want. Mm. Most people won't. It's legal to follow 1,000 people on a day in Twitter. Most people won't.
Gotcha.
It's legal to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Most people are like, but you can't do that. Who says? Who is the morality police? Well, the morality police is the platforms themselves, because they want you to pay them to use ads. That's why they frown on this stuff.
How you dare? How you dare? That was the voice of Vin Clancy. Now, Vin is an infamous growth hacker who has grown from rags to riches. Really, rags to riches. He was living on welfare, essentially, in the United Kingdom, and he found his way to success by building websites that accumulated millions of views, which ultimately led him down this pathway. He became this world-renowned expert, where he started speaking on tours all over the world. He had a six-figure book launch before the book actually came out. And throughout this podcast, we talk about why he's been known as an infamous growth hacker, how he started, what tips and trends he noticed, and tips he has for you in the audience as aspiring thought leaders and potential growth hackers. Hope you enjoy the episode. He's a very interesting guy. And as you can tell from the introduction, he's someone that understands systems and platforms really, really well, and is able to stay above the trends. So I hope you gain some insight into it, and I hope you're able to apply that to your platform. All right? Enjoy the episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of As Told by Nomads. And today's guest is Vin Clancy. Now, Vin is an infamous growth hacker that went from being on social welfare in the UK to winning the best speaker at South by Southwest for his growth hack and talk. He finished a 100-day world tour and earned six figures in his debut growth hacking book. He did all this without a book publisher. So we're going to be talking about how he grew from someone that was on social welfare to someone that became world-renowned growth hacker. And then we're also going to be diving into how to distinguish between the real and the fake internet marketers. Welcome to the show.
I am going to be a good guest.
Okay, well, that's the first I've ever heard that. So I agree. I love the confidence. So in the fashion of being a good guest, why don't you tell us your background? Because the idea of going from social welfare, especially in the UK, I don't think a lot of people in the audience know what the difference is with social welfare in the UK, to finding a way to distinguish yourself as one of the premier growth hackers is quite fascinating to me. What was it like growing up for you?
Growing up was like we were real poor, and like people were getting shot and killed and dealing drugs in the block we lived in Shepherd's Bush. But my parents worked us to an estate that was less bad, and then to the suburbs, while I was growing up. But then when I left home, it was kind of like it all started over. I had like a dead end job, but I got made redundant the week I moved out. And I just didn't see the point of going to work, so I stopped going. And I signed on with Welfare. And then I was like, I just seen the Social Network movie, which I think really changed the world and inspired a lot of people. So I was like, I want to go full in on this startup thing. So I had a few ideas. And then one day I had an idea of creating the next big online content empire like Vice or Huffington Post. I started calling up every university and college in the country and saying, do you want to write for the best online magazine that's coming up in the UK? I can't pay you, but it's going to be really cool. And you'll get a platform to write on and we'll make you better writers. You'll have editors looking at your work. So I was on Welfare, like living on less than $100 a week in East London in a house with no heating. And that really matters in England, by the way. So I was real poor, but we started to get content. I started to learn how to make things go viral and get thousands of views. Within our second week, we had 25,000 visitors. After 6 months, we had 300,000 visitors a month. And around that time, we raised $250,000. I got us instantly out of debt. We started to grow the company, got to 1 million visitors a month, just creating this viral content. And then I started a second site, Screen Robot, got that to 1 million visitors a month in 100 days, got into Techstars Accelerator ahead of 1,500 other startups, raised a second round of money, then started to do growth hacking and net marketing for other people. So started an agency, started public speaking, won best speaker at South by Southwest V2V, released my first book, Secret Sauce, pretty much the first ever in-depth growth hacking book. That did six figures in pre-orders on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Did a 100-date world tour speaking to support that and build my brand. Got featured in loads of press, worked with the royal family, moved to the United States on the O-1 visa. And here I am speaking to you from Beverly Hills, Los Angeles.
So you and I share the O-1 visa. I also, I'm a Nigerian and I didn't know about that until that. And for those listening, O-1 visas are given to, you know, they say it's aliens with extraordinary abilities. So it could be actors, models, or people, entrepreneurs who have a skill set or maybe Nobel Peace Prize winners. But I want to, you said a lot. So let's just start off with the first Welfare part where you said, you learned how to grow your audience. So now you called all these schools and you were saying, hey, I have, you know, the hottest platform here in the UK. But I wonder if you could reverse engineer the process of actually growing an audience. You figured it out pretty early. So what exactly did you do to get it to grow that quickly?
Okay, so no one knows what would go viral. But what we do know, and I guess I learned this from, I guess, studying Huffington Post when I found out they were releasing, 50 articles a day, and that eventually became about 500. But so I knew that we would have to create 10 to 15 to 20 articles per day for one to pop off. So that meant we had to have a lot of content coming in. So what that means for people listening is, two posts a week probably isn't going to cut it. If they're well researched and you have an amazing traffic engine, like a Facebook ad budget, and you know how to do it, maybe. But basically the learning is you've got to put a lot of content out. Then you've got to know where your readers are. So we knew there were like 5 or 6 websites that could send us traffic. So we optimized for those websites. Some of them working now, some of them not. But wherever you are, you have to have an eye for your audience and create lots of content and then know how to get that traffic. That's it.
Okay. Now, has that changed over time with the algorithms?
Yeah. I mean, Facebook ate everything. I mean, another thing about Planet Ivy was timing is something I hate talking about, because if you talk about timing, it makes it sound like it's an important factor, and it kind of is. The timing you do, you often don't have control over, but it's important. You could have the right idea, great team, but the timing, you could be too early or too late. So with online magazines, Facebook hadn't yet eaten the ad empire. We would sometimes get $20 for every 1,000 people who viewed a banner ad on our site. Like, that's so big compared to now, it's like less than a dollar. Because Facebook can do better targeting than all the magazines. They're just, as Facebook and Google just own the ad market. So, yeah, so like that whole idea has changed. The idea of content switched towards video a lot. So around 2015, the slide really began. When mobile picked up and could handle video, it took over the written content a little bit. Many would argue you can monetize it better. So like videos changed, but the mechanics are still the same. Put out lots of content, find out where you can get traffic from. That's pretty timeless.
So if I'm to summarize what you're saying, and for those listening, because we have a lot of aspiring thought leaders or even thought leaders who are looking to grow their audience, and they are experts or aspiring experts in all these different things, and they want to share a message, you're saying be consistent in putting out content. So not twice a week. You should do it, I guess. You're saying volume matters. And also idea of knowing where your audience is, which is a tricky thing for people to really understand. How do you know where your audience is?
Use your hands. Like it's a piece of advice I really like. People always want to outsource or hire someone else to do it or have an algorithm or automation do it. It doesn't take much. Like to find these pockets of people. Like I was looking at a new niche and then I just happened to be just looking around Twitter, I don't even know why, and then I found this entire niche on here I'd never heard talked about, but it was the exact niche I was trying to reach, and it's an amazing strategy I had, and I connected with tens of thousands of people from it. I just didn't even know it was there. I couldn't have done that if I'd done research or asked people. No one knew it was there. But use your hands. You know, look around, talk to people. Another thing I would do if you're new to a market, go to a conference you have to pay for. And that means that there's people who are really in the game. There's will be a lot less beginners. And then have three questions that you're going to ask everyone. So something like, I want to be the biggest in my market in 2 years. What do I have to do in the next 6 to 12 months? That's a very good question to ask. And then you go around having to do all the blogs. Because blogs are really bad, man. Oh, they're so bad. So yes, so speaking to people in real life is a great idea.
So you're saying person to person, using your hands, and just building those relationships. So it sounds like, you know, so basically do the work to know who are key figures in your environment that are close to that field or in that field, when it's going to a conference or maybe like a random search on Twitter, and see what you can learn from that. Okay.
Yeah. And what I realized recently is if you're doing a startup, it's kind of okay to be in your room just hustling to get customers and visitors. But in most other industries, they're relationships based. Okay. So you've got to get out of the building. It took me a long time to learn this. I love growth hacking. I love getting traffic through like doing all these little things. But ultimately, in any industry, there's a few at the top who make all the money, and you've got to be friends with them. You've got to be in their circle.
So why you called it infamous growth hacker?
Because I do things most people are scared to do. Hmm. And I get results most people don't normally get. People take a lot of traditional thinking and put it in business, and it just doesn't work. Behind every great business is a great crime, unfortunately.
So when you say you do things people are scared to do, I guess does that lean towards the controversy? You're not afraid to be in your face?
People tend to get terms of service confused with the law. It's okay. Kind of amazing. In my 5 years of growth hacking, there's been no expose. I've never done anything wrong. You know what I mean? If you search my name, you'll never get, he did this really bad hack, because I never did anything really immoral or illegal. I just used the terms of service to their absolute limit. Does this make sense?
Please elaborate. When you say you use the terms of service,
It's legal to, if you're a business, email another business in America.
Right.
That's it. It's legal. So you can send 10 million emails a day if you want. Mm. Most people won't. It's legal to follow 1,000 people on a day in Twitter. Most people won't.
Gotcha.
It's legal to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Gotcha. Most people are like, but you can't do that. And it's like, well, who says? Who is the morality police? Well, the morality police is the platforms themselves, because they want you to pay them to use ads. That's why they frown on this stuff.
And the name infamous, the adjective infamous was attached to you ever since.
I'll give you an example. I was hired by an app company to get them app downloads firstly, which I did, and then to have like a huge party at South by Southwest, and there was no marketing budget. So South by Southwest, everyone was on Twitter and is on Twitter, but 2015 was like Twitter's last year before it like decided to decline a bit. So all we did was use Twitter, and anyone who was using the South by Southwest hashtag, we told them to like retweet this, and they can get an invite and get free drinks for our big party with like top name DJ. And we had like over 1500 people through the door. And that was just through like four of us on Twitter talking to people. It's gotcha. Like most people wouldn't do that, but
You're willing to go the extra mile. Okay.
Yeah.
Another thing about you though, is you've done some incredible things without the traditional format. So you earned a six figures without a book publisher. And mm-hmm. you've spoken at 100 events in a year without an agent. Now, is this to your relationship point where you just sort of found people that need what you want through social media and through talking to people, and then you just pitched yourself as the expert? Or how did it go?
Kind of. I don't like networking, like in the traditional business sense. But if you do public speaking, the whole room has to listen to you. And you're positioned as a person or authority. And then the content has to be good. But because I've been in my room for so many years before I started speaking, I had all this knowledge in my head. I'm really lucky. Someone out of the blue said, I'll pay you money if you come and give a talk. I'd never given a talk before. And then I didn't realize how much I knew, if that makes sense. I'd just been in my room working on my startup. But public speaking is a great way of positioning that and building real relationships. Like I might go to Houston and like it probably wasn't a great talk, there's only 30 people there, but then one or two of those people become super fans who comment on everything I've done since. It does work out, and then other people lead to other clients and book sales and all sorts of other things.
Could you describe the way you pitch? Because I think sometimes there are people that are caught up in the, you know, they're really good at their content, but when it comes to pitching, either it's a fear or they don't want to feel like they're asking too much.
Pitching for talks, for instance, you just go on Meetup and Eventbrite and you search for your keywords and the cities you want to go to. And then you message the...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You copy and paste this message to all of the organizers. My name is X, and I give a talk on 10 ways to be better in your industry, the future of our industry in 10 steps, etc. Can I come and give a talk at your event? I have a massive network I can invite. Just say that, they never check, and then just copy and paste that to all of the events, and you'll get bookings.
Eventbrite.com and meetups.com, definitely.
And there's probably a couple other sites, but those are the main two. Yeah. But it's the same thing. People message someone and they expect to get a reply. They won't. In anything, when you message 10 people, two or three will reply and one will become a sale. And that's the same. So just understand that and feel confident to hit the copy paste button.
Love it, love it. Yeah, I use Eventbrite often, and especially and meetups I've used in the past as well. So that's a good tip. The book then. So I just wrapped up my book and I sent it to my editor. And I did it with I didn't have an agent as well. It took me a year, right, to find a book publisher, but it was the traditional way. You did it, and you earned six figures without a book publisher. What was the mechanics behind that? Because I think trying to find a book publisher to pay attention to me was the longest and sometimes frustrating process for me.
Well, I hate to say it, but timing. Timing again is really good.
For someone who doesn't like saying timing.
I know. The reason I say this is with the first book, we didn't do a webinar launch. We didn't really have email lists. I'd only given a handful of talks. And it did so well. It's just we had the new thing. Growth hacking was this new thing. And then Ryan Holiday had done a book on it that was very vague. Just no one else had done a book. So we had done the here's the step-by-step how to do it. So Ryan Holiday's book was great for like middle managers to get understand the concepts, but had no specifics. So we were basically the first book to do it. And then we just did really well on Kickstarter. We got a lot of sales within Kickstarter. But to be more helpful, we did a viral pre-launch queue, which made a big difference. So what that was we made a landing page saying, sign up here to be notified when the book launches. And then once they drop their email, they get put into a viral queue. So you're in 500th place. To move further up the queue, share this on Twitter. Share this on email, like us on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. So people took all these actions to get the word out for us. They invited all their friends, and I think we had around 3,000 people waiting in the queue when the book launched because so many people had invited other people. And so a lot of people signed up really quickly for the book. And again, we won the first suit of viral pre-launch queue. So Dropbox had done it as a startup. We were one of the first to do it as like a book. So, wow. So many people were like, I'm not that interested in the book, but your marketing is amazing. And I've invited loads of friends to it.
Wow. That's a gamification too. Like you played in on the gamification. Wow.
Ah. Yeah. And the algorithms on Facebook were favorable in 2016. So when we started our Facebook group, like another thing I'll talk about. So the viral pre-launch queue was key for that. And to protect our margins, we didn't do a physical book. Actually we did later, much later, but, we charged more for it. But, it really was a life-changing thing for me. That really overnight moved me away from consulting and into the information selling business.
And I can imagine. So we've talked about speaking, we've talked about growth hacking, which you also did with your speaking and your book selling. One thing I'm noticing with you is you do really understand people and what gets people to move. So you apply mm-hmm. that to your landscape. We haven't talked about entrepreneurship. Now that's mm-hmm. that's the other thing. So a lot of people, you know, entrepreneurship is like the new hot word. Growth hacking was the word at the time, and now everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. How did you end up raising money? I feel like that takes a different side of your brain to figure out how to get investors and things to pay for.
I'm not going to say timing, but London. Okay. London in 2012. Look, I might be wrong. I live in America. For all I know, London startup scene's thriving. I don't think it is. But London 2012 was like a really good time to start a startup. It was like a kind of euphoria that anyone could start a business and it could blow up because it was happening for everyone. Again, before the FANG companies, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, just buy everything now. So it was a great time to start. And I guess the truth is I didn't know what I was doing. And I had one friend in the magazine industry and I biked over to see her in East London and I bought her a coffee. I actually bought her the wrong coffee, but it didn't matter. And then I was like, okay, what do I do? I want to be a magazine guy. She was like, just get traffic. If you get that, you'll get brands, you'll get investors, you'll get writers. And that was it. It was just one piece of advice. So that's all we focused on. So we had done 1 million page views in the past 3 months while I was on welfare. I even went on holiday for a week at one point and the traffic just carried on coming in. We had an article go majorly viral, and that really helped support that. So like every other startup was like, here's our idea. It's going to be great. We were like, well, we ain't got an idea. We've got something that's working right now. And it's had 1 million visitors in the past 3 months. And someone who had just left Facebook said, I want to be your advisor. They introduced us to 3 different investors. And 2 of them ended up giving us $250,000. And that was the day my life changed, really. So that's kind of how that happened.
You know, and, you know, as someone listening, what I'm hearing is taking away the timing aspect, because I think, you know, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. But you'd been preparing, you know, you did the work where you said you biked over to get coffee. You listened to the feedback and you applied what you said, what she said to that. And when you did that, you started to get the attention of, you know, people that could do something about that. So wherever anyone is listening, it's really understanding what works in your industry, who are the potential players, whether it's the people that have access to more opportunities or people that need what you're providing, and then just showing up and being that person consistently that is able to deliver. And then when you do that, you start to get noticed, whether it's a video you put out, whether it's just the awesomeness of your service, or whether it's the word of mouth based on how good you deliver. So just focusing on that would lead to more opportunity, sounds like, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think it was Naval on Twitter who said, look, you can get lucky once, but you have to be good for a whole career. Luck won't sustain you. You may get one lucky break or so, but, you know, I've got 5-6 years of these little highlights now. So things like luck and timing, they're only a little bit of it. It is, you know, 10 hours a day, 6 days a week forever.
Yeah. Because, I want people to understand that, yeah, I mean, in this 5-6 years, the idea of having raising money through your company, through book being a book publisher, through speaking, growth hacking to 11,000 members on Facebook as a group, those things don't happen by accident. You know, so because sometimes people have this wrong notion that, oh, growth, he just growth hacked his way, it doesn't matter. But it takes a lot of work, especially to do it across industries. Interesting. Now, obviously, when you start to do this, you and I are not citizens, you get attention to be able to get a visa. Now, I have an interesting story of how I found out that there was an O-1 visa. I was doing a magazine interview, and someone just recommended it. Said, hey, with your podcast and all the speaking you do, have you ever thought about that? So I never heard about it before. I'm curious how you got the O-1 visa. And according to you, you said Justin Bieber had the same visa.
Yeah, well, it's funny. It's pretty much exactly the same story as you. One of the writers who used to write for Planet Ivy, it's funny how all things come around. She was like, oh, can you recommend me for an O-1 visa? I said, what's that? I'm about to get one. I was like, introduce me to your lawyer now. And then, and then the lawyer's like, oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, we can get it. I was like, what, definitely? Oh, yeah. And then, like, in fact, when we applied, it took 3 weeks. Mad.
What? You're going to make me so mad. It took me forever. It took me 6 months.
Well, no, it took me, it probably took me 6 months to get everything together, but, dropping it off. I actually had to come back from it. I had to cancel half a speaking tour because I had to come back to get the stamp in my passport. But, we thought it would take longer. But, it was amazing. But, exactly, like you. I didn't even believe it was possible. Just like, well, it would be nice, but amazing.
So for those listening, if you're just curious about what an O-1 visa is, it's a visa that's just for, you know, creatives, entrepreneurs, and people that are trying to work in the United States sometimes. And America has a very complex sometimes immigration process. So it's very strenuous. I think for me, I had to have 14 letters of recommendation. It was originally 10, and it ended up being 4 more. And you have to have done so many things. So that's what that is. But I say all this to say, I want Vince's story to inspire you to understand that today's world, whether it's with digital media or whether it's what you want to be a thought leader, there are many opportunities if you look for them. Or sometimes if you do what you're supposed to do, some opportunities will pop up in front of you and say, hey, do you know that this could actually be a potential for you to work across several continents? So always check and look for visa options. You never know where how much flexible that can do, that can make you. Because I'm sure with you, Vin, now that you can sort of work here and obviously United Kingdom, it gives you more flexibility and access to opportunities. You're in California, so you're, you know, stone's throw away from San Francisco, and then, you know, all these places that probably need a lot of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Wow. This is cool. So as we get ready to wrap up, I want people to know how they can reach out to you. What is the best way to reach out to you?
Facebook. So Facebook Messenger, Vin Clancy. Just message me is really best.
Vin Clancy, Facebook. Any things that you're working on that we should be on the lookout for?
I'm selectively doing stuff. I'm always looking for people to coach and help out and strategize with them. If they don't know how to get traffic, they don't know how to grow their company. That's something I really like doing.
Okay. And people can obviously reach out to you on Facebook Messenger if they're interested in that.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the last questions I had, I wanted to ask this earlier, but your other stories got me so interested. It was around your speaking. I do a lot of speaking training, but I'm always curious to hear other people's thoughts on this. What do you think makes a great speaker? You've spoken, obviously, a lot. So what is the art of storytelling on stage for you?
Yeah, it's a few things, like raw talent in your information to have ideas that either aren't out there or an excellent curation of existing ideas. So I had a bit of a mix of both, but I think when I started out, it was just other people's ideas, and eventually I slotted my own in. Then again, being aware of your audience, they need one joke every 6 minutes. It needs to be interesting enough. It's very likely they're going to look at their phones. So you have to have some pizzazz to entertain them, you know, and that can be a very deep story. It doesn't have to be humor, like a TED talk type thing, but you can't just go up there with your slides. Use black slides with right writing, like white background just looks horrible. People say don't put too many words per slide, but if you're just starting out, how the hell are you going to remember everything? Like I pretty much the whole way through had the lines on the screen, but after a while you know them and you don't need to look at the screen, but they're there as a prompt. And the only way to get good at it is to do it.
Your industry is interesting though, because you do have a lot of people say internet marketers are a scam artists sometimes. So how do you communicate authenticity? Because I don't even know how people sometimes figure out whether, you know, you're the truth or whether it's this is another person just trying to, like, a snake oilsman. So how do you make sure that you're one that doesn't come across as inauthentic?
Well, I had a body of work that wasn't internet marketing. So if the only money they've made is by teaching other people how to do it, I think people can sense that. And it's actually got a lot harder for the snake oil salesman, if you can call them that, to succeed. They don't tend to last in the market anyway, because the problem is they all sell similar products, so none of them can really stand out.
There
weren't many and still aren't many doing growth hacking. There's a few more now, but that was my corner of the internet, bringing startup techniques to mainstream businesses. That was the niche I created.
Yeah. So tips for people to look out for, a substance would be just try and look at their body of work is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Wrapping up here, my mission statement is use your difference to make a difference. I ask my guests, that in the form of a question, to end the interviews. So how do you, Vin, use your difference to make a difference?
Well, I've helped thousands of people, change their lives, be it in productivity or in their business, to support their families, to make the world a better place, to inspire people with my story. I get messages all the time. I've saved a lot of them. I have hundreds of messages just being like, I'm so inspired by you going from welfare to doing this, and now I'm going to do something similar and tell my story of crystal meth addiction or whatever it is. So it's never something I actively chased after. But if you do good work and get out and do a lot for free, give talks for free, give out a lot of free content, you help the thousands of people who can't afford you rather than putting it all behind a paywall in a mastermind.
All right. There you go. Vin Clancy, using this difference to make a difference by encouraging people to use their stories and embrace the power of them. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I mean, if someone is just starting out, my second book, acethegame.com, the 100 best growth hacks in the world right now, is probably the best starting point for them to do what I did.
Okay. acethegame.co.uk.
.com.
acethegame.com. Gotcha. All right. Well, I just want to thank you for coming on the show. This has definitely been an interesting one. I love that you gave very practical tips. So I'm sure these things will be immediately applicable for the audience. So thank you so much.
Great.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, till next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.